We've reached game week 9 in the Premier League, and the gap at the top is now 3 points. Leaders Arsenal face another London derby test this weekend as they take on Crystal Palace at the Emirates. Manchester City, meanwhile, are on a roll, and they look to make it 4 straight league wins when they visit the resurgent Aston Villa. There's also a return to management for Sean Dyche to discuss. We've got it all covered on this week's Assist. To this week's Assist in association with freesupertips.com, your home for daily football hackers and bet builders. I'm Warren Ashurst, and I'm again delighted to be joined this week by both Mark Langdon and Dan Childs to discuss their thoughts and tips on both the Premier League and EFL fixtures ahead. Don't forget, of course, to interact with us as well and give us your thoughts on the tips and anything in the football world regarding what we talk about, of course, on the Assist on the Racing Post YouTube channel. We'll kick off straight away by getting into the Premier League fixtures this weekend. And as ever, in order of importance, and we'll kick off with the clash at the Emirates on Sunday at 2 p.m., one of a whole host of games taking place on Sunday as Arsenal play host to Crystal Palace. The leaders are 4-9 to claim the victory here. Palace 6-1, and the draw is 15-4. Already a lot of people, Mark, talking about Arsenal being the team obviously to beat now in terms of the title and opening up a 3-point lead at the top. Just how good and how impressed have you been over the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, definitely impressed with what they're doing. I mean, it was only a few weeks ago, Warren, that they went to Newcastle and people were saying it's must win. And if they don't win, they're out of the title race. So, you know, things can change very quickly. Lose a game, confidence goes. You know, maybe an injury to one of those two centre-backs and things can look very different, albeit that they've got a lot more depth now. So they're playing with supreme confidence. You know, they're so strong in a lot of departments, defensively being absolutely outstanding. Got a lot of different options in sort of the midfield and attacking wide positions now, and, you know, remain as good as ever from set pieces. So deserve to be title favourites, particularly with the way that Liverpool have fallen away. I just urge caution, really, in terms of the, they're good things and it's all over type thing that you're hearing.
We'll talk about Crystal Palace in more detail in a moment, Dan, but in terms of Arsenal, obviously, as ever, look very secure at the back. Have you got any concerns still going forward, or do you think that we're heading in the right direction?
Heading in the right direction. I mean, on the defensive thing, they do give up so few chances, and that is obviously, you know, a massive plus point. I would just say, though, that it could sort of bite you on the backside by not going for the kill in some of these games. I mean, the Fulham game, they're kind of in control. They get the first goal, set piece again, don't create loads from open play, and the game stays open, and it only takes one moment, you're dropping 2 points. I just think over the course of 38 games, if you're not sort of burying teams, you could leave yourself open to drop points. And compared to City, who've got Haaland just, you know, going absolutely goal crazy. I mean, even the West Ham game, we've seen how poor they are. And, it's a sort of game that a real top side, you should really be absolutely putting them to the sword. That would be the only concern I'd have. But, they've certainly got every chance.
Palace go into this game, Mark, off the back of that 3-3 draw against Bournemouth last time out, which was a dramatic affair and probably a game that Palace should have ended up ultimately winning. And it's one of those matches, you look at it from an Arsenal perspective, where it's a dangerous fixture.
It's a tricky one. Crystal Palace playing well this season, following on from what they did at the end of the last campaign, winning the FA Cup. Just a very good team. If you actually look at it in XG goal difference, they're the top two teams at the moment. Arsenal are leading the way. Crystal Palace doing remarkably well to be in second. Obviously, the 3-3 you referenced there against Bournemouth, like Mateta has a chance to win it, right at the end, albeit that it was a fairly late equaliser he got. So, I mean, they could have lost. They might have won. I think overall, you kind of have to be okay with a draw. But yeah, they're a good side. They'll provide a test. I don't think playing Larnaca in the Conference League on Thursday should be that much of a handicap. It's at home, a team that you're not going to cause as many problems as what some others might to Crystal Palace. So an opportunity for Palace to get sort of shake up the title betting. But I still think it's a big ask to go to the Emirates and get anything the way that Arsenal are playing at the moment.
Just before we get your best bets, guys, on the first game that we feature on here, Palace, Dan, for you, are capable of finishing in the top six, shall we say, or are we still jury out at the moment?
No, I don't think they will finish in the top six, no. I just think it's hugely competitive up there, and I think there's too much of a drop-off with certain players in their squad. If you pick up injuries, you're certain to pick up injuries, and suspensions are highly likely to over a long season. And, with the addition of the European games as well, I think as the season goes on as well, that could become quite key. I mean, if they're kind of like, a toss-up between pushing for Europa League qualification in the league or maybe, trying to win the Conference League, which they are favourites to win that competition, you could kind of maybe see them later in the season prioritising those games. So I would be wary of backing them for a top-six finish.
You've already alluded, I think, to the fact, Mark, that you're edging towards a home side in your bet here.
Yeah, Arsenal under 3.5 goals is the way that I would look to play this one. It sort of fits into what Dan was saying, really, about Arsenal not always going for the kill, particularly in Premier League games. And I was going to reference that West Ham one where they won it comfortably. Now, Palace are better than West Ham, but I mean, what that will do is that will just focus their minds even more to not give any sort of goals or chances away. So I don't see Palace being blown away, but also don't see them sort of penetrating, what's the best defence in the world at the moment.
What do you think, Dan, in terms of your best bet here?
I've got the same bet. Yeah, I just think that I'm tempted looking at, I mean, Arsenal, what, 4-9 to win the game? I mean, the Palace are the sort of side going to, as we've seen it quite a lot, haven't we, against last season's FA Cup final in the Community Shield against strong teams. They are set up well, they can defend well, offer a threat on the counter-attack. But I just think, I agree with Mark, I think Arsenal just don't offer up those opportunities like the likes of Manchester City and Liverpool do. And I think they'll get the job done. They'll score a goal. Palace, I think it's just, I agree with Mark that playing at home to Larnaca is not a massive issue, but it's, you'd rather have a clutter three build up to the game. And Arsenal, I think, will have too much.
Okay, well, that is just a reminder, a 2 p.m. kickoff on Sunday. It's one of four 2 o'clock kickoffs, I should say, on Sunday afternoon. And one of the others is at Villa Park, where Aston Villa, who have turned their fortunes around recently, will play host to Manchester City. Villa 31-10, City 17-20, and the draw 11-4. Really interesting one, this one, Dan, because, both teams are running into a little bit of form at the moment. Big win for Villa at Tottenham last weekend.
Yeah, I think that City's form is more sustainable. They're 9 games unbeaten now. They're kind of winning games quite comfortably, aren't they? Another good win from a tough test, Villarreal in midweek. You got the job done against Everton, who can be awkward. I just think they're going along quite nicely now. And Haaland is just out of this world, isn't he? I mean, they've got defensively, they've got 3 clean sheets in a row, but Haaland is just, he's almost guaranteed, at least a goal a game at the moment. And I think Villa, they've got 5 wins in a row. I wouldn't say that they've played the best teams there. Against Tottenham, I think they were probably slightly the worst side for a long period of that game, and then, won the game with 2 really good strikes. So I just feel that, I think Tielemans is a big player for them. They've got this run together without him. I think to go on and have a really good season, I think it's really important they get him back fit, because I think he kind of makes them tick. So I think City at the odds are worth taking. City at odds on.
Okay. Well, Villa, of course, in action on Thursday prior to us recording. We're recording prior to that game, I should say, Mark. I just wonder how much of an impact you feel that might have.
Yeah, well, we spoke about it with Crystal Palace. I mean, it's not ideal to play Thursday when you're the worst team against a team that's played Tuesday and is the superior side. And I think that Villa, should and will be taking the Europa League really seriously this season. It's not the strongest competition, so a big opportunity to win and to get a Champions League spot. So expect Villa to be fully focused for that. Again, I've got the same bet as Dan. We agree here on City. What I would say about Villa, in the 8 Premier League games so far, their XG 6.3. They created virtually nothing against Tottenham, scored two great goals, but that wasn't through intricate play. It wasn't from set pieces. It was just two moments of individual brilliance. So if it becomes a game of kind of who's got those moments, I'm taking City to have more of those than Aston Villa.
Before, Mark, we go on to the third game, I just wanted to ask you about City and the title chances, because all of a sudden, you know, without necessarily pulling up a whole lot of trees other than maybe Haaland's goal-scoring run, they're all of a sudden on Arsenal's tail.
Yeah, well, they were my tip at the start, Warren, to win it, and they since signed Donnarumma, so they've got a world-class goalkeeper, they've got a world-class centre-forward. At the moment, Stones, Diaz, Guardiol as three of your back four is very strong. Options in midfield, Savino played very well against Villarreal. Doku has had a good season. I don't think you can rely on him all season. He's going to blow hot and cold. The problem they've got is Rodri's out injured at the moment. I thought Nico Gonzalez has just started to look like a steady enough replacement for Rodri, but he got substituted in that game against Villarreal, and I'm not sure how serious that problem is. So that would be my biggest concern going to Villa if they haven't got that sort of defensive midfielder. But like they're a good side, Man City, and they're definitely not got the kind of in-depth tools that Arsenal have got. If you kind of Arsenal player for player, like they've got about three players, you know, just interchange Madueke and Saka and Martinelli and Trossard and Eze and Odegaard, loads of different players. City, I think, run on a smaller squad, but what they have got is outstanding quality in both boxes with Donnarumma and Haaland, and that always gives you a chance of reeling off 10 wins in a row or something like that.
Well, don't forget as well, they're an injury time goal conceded away at Arsenal, away from being top of the league right now.
Yeah,
that's the fine lines.
Yeah,
it is indeed, and of course that experience of winning title after title as well will obviously stand them in good stead. Our next match to focus on involves the current defending champions as Liverpool make the journey to the G-Tech Community Stadium to take on Brentford. It's an 8 o'clock kickoff on Saturday evening. The Bees 7-2, Liverpool 4-6, and the draw is 100-30. We have to start with Liverpool, Mark. Off the back of four straight defeats, they probably couldn't have asked for a better game than facing Eintracht Frankfurt in midweek.
Well, no, I mean, they went behind, didn't they? And so at that point, you're thinking, oh no, five in a row. Like, Frankfurt give up a lot of goals. I mean, they're an absolutely chaotic team with the way that they try to score, but like leave themselves open defensively. So from that point of view, maybe it was a good game for Liverpool. But if you're looking at it on paper, an away game against a decent Bundesliga team with a strong enough home record, I think that had the trappings there of being a sort of a real accident waiting to happen for Liverpool. The fact that they've managed to negotiate it and in such fine fashion eventually, I think should restore confidence. So it was a big win for Liverpool. I fancied them to win this game even before that though, Warren. So I'm going to stick with Liverpool to win this game. Like, I think that they've been a bit unlucky so far, and Brentford, they're plucky, but I thought they were terrible for a large part of that game against Man City. And if they sit off Liverpool like they did City, I think the game could be over before they get into it.
It's a train of thought that Liverpool maybe used up all the luck earlier in the season in games where they won late on, of course, but then likewise, they've actually played not that badly in recent weeks. And against Manchester United, Dan, probably should have had at least two or three goals and may well have come away with a victory. As it works out, they end up losing that game, but they have scored five in midweek.
Yes, but there's a vulnerability there, isn't there? They conceded early against United, who you've got to remember, have had a shocking away record, going there. And not a lot of people fancied United, myself included, and then very soon after levelling, they've gone behind again, and I just do think there's a vulnerability there. Every time I watch Liverpool this season, they don't look right to me at the back. They look like they're going to concede goals. The balance isn't right for me. He's tried different sort of things. Sometimes he plays vert, sometimes he doesn't. You know, certain players, I mean, Salah's been mentioned, you know, are reluctant to track back. And I actually thought Brentford, I agree with, about the City game. I thought against Chelsea at home, you know, a high-level opponent at home. I thought they played well, gave them a really good game, got a deserved 2-2 draw. I thought against West Ham, as bad as West Ham were, I was also really impressed by Brentford. The way they controlled the game, physically strong, nice and composed on the ball. Henderson, I thought, was superb, absolutely made them tick. He's been a brilliant signing for them. The centre-forward is an absolute handful. And yeah, I think they can give Liverpool problems. And I'm going to go. I'm going to oppose Liverpool. Going to go Brentford or draw, double chance odds against.
Great, interesting clash to look forward to then on Saturday evening. Up next on our list is the clash on 4:30 on Sunday between Everton and Tottenham at the Hill Dickinson Stadium. Everton 11-8 to claim the victory here. Spurs 2-1 and the draw 12-5. A few concerns, Dan, maybe starting to set in a little bit amongst the Spurs faithful with how, not just the results of recent weeks, but maybe how the team are playing.
Yeah, I've been concerned for a while, I've got to be honest. The Bodo Glimt performance was dreadful. The Wolves home performance was poor. They weren't great against Leeds, got the result with a couple of deflected goals. And then the Monaco performance in the week. I've not watched the game. I was watching Watford with my son last night against West Brom. But looking at from what Mark said and the match report and the stats, and it doesn't look like a very good performance. And I do think, though, that the market has certainly reacted enough. I mean, you look at Everton are favourites to win this game. Spurs haven't actually lost yet away from home. So there's something there that they're showing a bit of resilience. But I certainly wouldn't be fancying backing Spurs in this, especially without Romero. I just think he's a big blow for them. Grealish obviously comes back in for Everton. He missed the game at City last week. But I can't bring myself to back Everton as favourites. It's going to go with a draw. I think it'll be a close game.
Yeah, and I can understand Dan's thinking there, Mark, because you look at Everton and you think, well, they're unbeaten still at the new stadium. Haven't necessarily pulled up any trees in terms of those performances. Spurs look better away from home than they have done at home in the league as well.
Yeah, I've gone Tottenham draw no bet in this game just for the reason that I think Everton as favourites, just it makes me nervous kind of no matter who they're playing, because there's not a huge amount of attacking threat in terms of goals. Grealish is the one that offers, you know, a lot of quality in those four positions. And you're right, like I watched the game against Palace and Brighton where Everton, I thought were fortunate. You could easily have lost both of those games. On another day, they would have done. And so, yeah, I'm not sure about Everton. There are negatives about Tottenham for sure, but that is factored into the market. And so Tottenham draw no bet 6-5 just felt sort of overpriced to me.
Okay, well, up next on our list is a trip to Old Trafford for Saturday's 5:30 kickoff as Manchester United play host to Brighton. United, of course, looking for 3 league wins on the bounce. Evens to win the game. Brighton 12-5, and the draw is 14-5. I think it's still probably a surprise to some people, Mark, many people, that Ruben Amorim is still in charge, but he is going for 3 wins on the spin. But he has to be wary because Brighton have won the last 2 visits to Old Trafford, and that will be a concern for him.
Yeah, Brighton are a very awkward team to play against. They've got some excellent results already this season. You reference Man City and how high up the table they are. They beat them. They beat Chelsea as well, didn't they? So, you know, and Newcastle as well. So, you know, they're very good against sort of the better sides. You can sort of insert your own joke there about United. But it was a huge result for them at Anfield, just for what that game means and to win it, you know, and so the kind of the roll on and knock on effect of doing that, I think can have sort of big positives as long as they back it up. Like I think some of their forward play was interesting at Anfield, and you could see what they were doing. Maybe for like feels like the first time, or certainly the first time in ages, you could see what they were trying to do. They gave up a lot of opportunities in the match and were reliant. It was 3 times Liverpool hit the woodwork. I think this is going to be a high scoring game. That is factored in. So like you can't really back over 2.5 or BTTS because prices are really short. I've gone for a correct score 2-2, about 12-1. 7 of 8 games for Brighton have been both teams to score. United have only got 1 clean sheet. think both teams, have got good things going for them in the attacking third. Don't trust either, particularly defensively.
I think Mark's hit the nail on the head there, Dan. You know, it's a big win for them at Anfield, but if they don't back it up with a positive result against Brighton, the doom and gloom very quickly returns.
Yeah, I'm going to argue that this is an even bigger match for them. I just think that when you've had a great result like that, it's a real chance to sort of kick your season on. But the crucial thing is that you win the next one. And I think this is an awkward game. I mean, and I think with United, often there's a big reaction to every result and every performance in the market. I mean, you know, going into the Liverpool game, there's still, I know they've beaten Sunderland, but still a hell of a lot of negativity around. And they suddenly go and win there, ride the luck a bit, as Mark said, and they're now suddenly going off at evens at home to a very awkward Brighton team who had a very good result of their own. Newcastle have been playing pretty well lately, you know, and to get it was a very good 2-1 win for Brighton. So I'm not so sure they will. I wouldn't be comfortable backing them at that price to back it up. I don't think they'll lose, though. I think it'll be quite an even game, so I'm going to go with a draw. 14-5 looks overpriced.
Five down, five to go in our run-through of the Premier League fixtures this weekend. And it's a 3 o'clock kickoff on Saturday next for our focus. It's at Stamford Bridge, where Chelsea play host to Sunderland. Chelsea 21-50 to claim the victory here. It's 13-2 Sunderland and 15-4 the draw. Chelsea, a strange old side to work out, Dan, at the moment. I mean, obviously, that whole host of changes that they made for the midweek Champions League win over Ajax. And, well, it was made all the more easier from Ajax having a player sent off in the first 20 minutes. And they went on to cruise to victory. But I think a number of those younger players in particular were a stake to claim for a start of the weekend.
Yeah, and you can only kind of beat, you know, what's in front of you. I know, you know, circumstances are in their favour there. I mean, other games, you know, they've lost players, haven't they? To red cards, the Brighton game, the Man United away game, they've had to deal with that. But I do think, looking at Chelsea, they had that poor run, didn't they, between the international breaks, and then got the win at the end of it against Liverpool. And I just felt at the time they played really well to get that win as well, finished the game strong. And you thought, is this going to be a turning point? And then at Forest, played poorly actually first half, but then they go on and win the game 3-0. Ajax is, a pretty ordinary opponent, and they're playing against, 10 men. But I do think they've kind of turned the corner now, and I think this is a tough, confidence is high now with Chelsea. And I think Sunderland been brilliant at the moment. To get the points they've got at this stage is absolutely fantastic. And they've kind of deserved it, haven't they, with their performances, and they're showing a lot of good organisation. However, I do think away from home, I think they're going to struggle more. They've already had a couple of 2-0 away defeats at Burnley and Man United. Man United were poor before that match, weren't they? So I think they'll lose by at least a couple of goals at Chelsea. So they're going to go with Chelsea -1 on the handicap at odds against.
There's still no Cole Palmer for Chelsea at the moment, Mark, but I get the feeling that Pedro Neto has kind of come to the fore a little bit. And it maybe sometimes helps him when he's the main man, as he was at Wolves. He sort of seems to shine in that role.
Yeah, I mean, Palmer, you know, when he's a magnet to the ball, isn't he, when he plays? And last season, that was good for Chelsea, because he was everything he touched turned to gold, and they gave him the ball and he did the magic. Towards the back end of the season, and maybe now he's injured, you need to find new ways and new avenues. I can't work out, like, who the good players are at Chelsea and who the bad ones are. Because
I think Enzo Maresca is in the same boat.
They have people playing that I just think, like, I could literally be stood next to them in Tesco, and I just wouldn't be able to recognise them. They're Premier League footballers. So it's crazy, really, but they're all good players, I think, is kind of the problem that Maresca has got. Sunderland, 4 away games, have produced 5 goals. I think Chelsea will win comfortably enough, going for Chelsea in under 4.5.
Okay, well, Chelsea for both Dan and for Mark on Saturday. We're going to move to Sunday again now, and another of those 2 o'clock kickoffs. It takes place at the Vitality Stadium, where Bournemouth will play host to Nottingham Forest. New manager, of course, in situ for Forest. Bournemouth 7-10, Forest are 7-2, and the draw is 16-5. As I say, we're recording this before Forest are in Europa League action on Thursday, and we have to start off, Mark, by discussing the new appointment. Your thoughts on the sacking of Big Ange, and then also the appointment of Sean Dyche?
Yeah, I mean, I've said on an earlier assist show, Warren, that Postecoglou wouldn't last the season, so I'm not surprised he's gone. And I think I said that quite early on in his reign. It was a was a terrible appointment because he had no time to work with a team that wasn't used to playing the way that he would have wanted to play. And I don't think we ever really got to see, like, sort of inverted commas, Ange ball anyway, really, at Nottingham Forest. You know, he did a great monologue, didn't he, last week before the game against Chelsea. If he'd spent 5 minutes working on set pieces rather than on his speech, maybe they would have, you know, had more points on the board. I just think he just lacks kind of that, you know, the wasn't marginal gains that sort of often spoken about. Just doesn't seem that interested in them. I think he's a really good manager if he's got the best players, because if you've got the best players, like, I mean, then he can batter teams, and you want a manager like that who, you know, if you are the top dog in a league, you really want to be thrashing teams. You don't want to be grinding it out. And so I think that sort of, if I'm looking at where he goes next, I think that's the sort of job he should be looking for again, a bit like when he was at Celtic. In terms of Dyche, like, I think he's somebody that just makes sure nothing disastrous happens this season, and they probably reassess in the summer. Like, I don't see him being the person to take Forest to where Marinakis thinks they should be. So, yeah, I mean, I think he's just, you know, solid enough to make sure they don't get relegated, I think.
Sounds to me like you're talking up Ange Postecoglou as the next Arsenal manager, Mark.
No. I'd say, like, Celtic, where he was previously, yeah. And you know, Celtic have got a proper challenge on this season, haven't they, against Hearts, and they've got Hearts at the weekend. That should be a great game. But when he was at Celtic, like, I mean, that was perfect for him because, like, you got the best players. He knows, like, he knew the Asian market. He was able to bring in players that were kind of a level above Scottish Premiership and really just took them to the next level. And I think maybe Celtic fans can sometimes get bored of just winning matches when you're supposed to be winning them. So the way that Postecoglou's team played, I think, was absolutely perfect for a team like that. And there are many in Europe that are, you know, the top dogs. So it's not like I think his time in Europe is absolutely over, but I think he just needs to be shrewd about the next job he takes on.
Talk about bets for this game and Bournemouth in a moment. Dan, just wanted to get your thoughts on Sean Dyche's appointment. It seems to me like a natural fit, basically, across the board. A former Forest player, a similar style you would suggest of football to Nuno. Do you think it's the right move?
Yeah, and Dan, you've got the buy-in of the fans straight away, because you've got Ian Wone and Steve Stone as part of his backroom team as well. So yeah, that really helps as well. I just think that it will help him as well being replacing Ange as well, rather than replacing Nuno, who was obviously very popular. Ange has worked as a bit of a firebreak there, if you like. And I'm not saying he couldn't have handled the job a lot better, but going in after Nuno, I think, was a tougher gig than to go in now after Ange. I think the fans' reaction, they're gonna get behind Dyche. They're willing to get behind him straight away, I feel. And I think whoever had come in after Nuno was going to be, if the first couple of results don't go right, that Arsenal away first game, it was, you know, kind of a recipe for disaster, really.
Talk a bit about Bournemouth, Mark, because, again, they don't get the credit I think they deserve, really. And especially Iraola, I mean, you mentioned earlier on, they could have won, they could have lost that game at Palace, but I just love the way that they went there and had a real go.
Yeah, like, it doesn't seem to matter which players are missing, does it? You know, obviously, even Ilson wasn't playing, replacement comes in, scores a couple of goals, lost all the defenders and goalkeeper in the summer. You know, recruitment is very clever. Coach knows what he's doing. Sort of, the team is balanced. Semenyo is just a star of the Premier League, isn't he? I think he'd improve just virtually every team, really, in the league. So, yeah, a very good team. For this game, though, I think they have to work hard. They would have loved Ange to have still been in charge. I'm going to go for a 0-0 at half-time. I imagine Dyche will go there, sit in, and that will suit Forest. And Bournemouth have been 0-0 in their last couple of home games. I think Dan's referenced before, they don't have a huge home advantage given size of their crowd. And, like, I think they kind of have to work probably harder for their home points than maybe some other teams in the Premier League.
How do you see this one?
Yeah, I would agree with a lot of that. I also think that they're starting to concede a few chances and goals as well. I mean, you know, they led 2-0 at Palace have ended up drawing 3-3, and you know, Mateta really should have won the game in the end. So you know, they conceded two goals at Leeds as well, fell behind in the 3-1 win at home to Fulham. So the defence, which was looking solid, is maybe not looking quite so solid. And if Forest were to sort of score from a counter attack or a set piece, then you're having to score two goals against a team that are probably going to be a lot better organised than they have been in recent times. So I think he will make an early impact to Dyche, and I can see him. I'm uneasy about Bournemouth being odds on for this game. I think it'll be a close game, so I'm going to go with a draw.
We're going to quickly go through the remaining three Premier League games then of this weekend, and a big game to start off with at the bottom end of the table, where Wolves, still looking for their first win in the league, will play host to Burnley on Sunday at 2 o'clock. I can tell you that Wolves are 19-20 to claim the win. It's 16-5 Burnley and 23-10 the draw. I'll tell you what, Dan, having seen Wolves at Sunderland last week, I was very surprised to see that they were odds on to win this game.
Yeah, I think Wolves fans are probably not going to be wanting me to be tipping them, because I've followed them quite a lot this season and they've not done the business. I thought I'd get a result at Sunderland last week. And I'm sorry, Wolves fans, but I'm tipping you to beat Burnley in this one. I still think Wolves are going to improve. I've seen that the Sunderland first half performance was really poor. Overall performance for the game wasn't great. You know, they've lost the game 2-0. But the previous two games against Spurs and Brighton, I did see a lot more of what I would expect from Wolves. I don't think their squad is too bad. I think there's clearly a lack of confidence. So the key is really that you score the first goal. I think they've got quite a bit more threat than Burnley, especially with Strand Larsen spearheading the attack. I think Burnley are a team that are going to rely a hell of a lot on home form. Got the win at home to Leeds last weekend, which I wasn't that surprised about. But I think away from home, they're really struggling. Not got any points yet. Their fixture this away has been really tough. So this is a game they'll be targeting, thinking we've got more of a chance. However, I'm still thinking Wolves will finish above Burnley by the end of the season. So shade of odds on, I'm happy to go with that.
You and Wolves, they need to win this game, clearly, don't they? To at least, as Dan says, get confidence going.
Yeah, they do. I mean, you know, there's a lot of football on Sunday. I don't think this is going to be first on the list for most people to watch. But I actually think it might be more high scoring than the bookmakers think, because both teams to score is 21-20. And like, Burnley have got this reputation for being dour defensively, but they've only failed to score twice. And that was against Tottenham when they did create chances, and against Liverpool when they didn't. But, you know, you look at Wolves, no league clean sheet, and even teams that are not prolific, I'm thinking Everton and Leeds, have both got three at Molineux. So both teams to score.
Just mentioned Leeds there, and they're in action on Friday evening at 8 p.m. Elland Road is the venue for Leeds against West Ham. The hosts are 5-6. The Hammers 100-30. The draw 13-5. I have to scratch my head and think about a worst performance that I've seen in the Premier League for some time, Mark, when thinking about that West Ham defeat against Brentford on Monday. They have big problems at the moment.
They do. All I would say is that, you know, we do have short memories, and you know, you imagine how bad, like, Leicester. I think we probably said that about Leicester a lot of times last season. Like, it was a joke of a performance, absolutely abysmal. Weren't up for the fight. You could pick holes in just every department, from the manager, you know, right through to, you know, defence, midfield, attack. It was awful. I'm going for Leeds to win this game. I just don't see the fight in this West Ham team, and you have to fight at Elland Road. You know, 1 point from their last three games, Leeds, but they've actually won the XG 5.9-1.8 across those three matches. Now, some of that is down to a lack of quality up front, and you know, that's something that they won't be able to rectify until January. But I just think this is one of, outside of the obvious places, I think this is a horrible game for West Ham, because if you don't fight at Elland Road, you'll lose.
Are you equally surprised, Dan, at how bad West Ham were?
I was. I kind of had an idea they were a poor side. And, you know, I mean, you look at when Nuno first game came in, they got quite a decent draw, didn't they? Everton probably deserved it. Before the game, if you'd have asked me, will West Ham stay up, I would have said yes. After the game, I'm saying no. I think they've got a big job. Just to stay in touch and get the January, as Mark talked about, in January, you know, they've got a decent, they have a decent budget, and they can, you know, they can try and bring some players in that that they desperately need. But at the moment, the centre forward position, especially, is a massive issue. You look at Forkrug, you know, never seems to be fit. He clearly doesn't fancy Wilson. He's brought on the Marshall, the youngster who for Northern Ireland is behind Josh McGuinness and Reid, two League One strikers. So it's and it looked like it when he came on. He had no impact at all. And I just think there's a general lack of physicality in the centre of through the spine of the team, which you really need going to Leeds. No proper centre forward that you can rely on. The centre backs, you know, don't look strong enough. Brentford, apart from outplaying them, absolutely bullied them. And it's not going to be any easier at Leeds. So even though there are a shade of odds on, Leeds to win.
Okay, and last but not least, we're heading to St James's Park for Newcastle against Fulham. One of the rare 3 o'clock kickoffs on Saturday. Newcastle 8-13, the draw 3-1, Fulham 9-2. Big and an impressive win for Newcastle, Dan, I'd say, midweek against Benfica. Off the back of that defeat against Brighton, we keep saying it, they're a much better team at home than they are on the road.
Yeah, yes, they are, but I don't think they were terrible as well in the game at Brighton. I just think that was a difficult game between two decent sides that, you know, could go either way. I think they're in a false position, Newcastle. They had the Isak situation in the summer. The big concern is who's going to come in to replace him. I've been really impressed by Voltimada. I think he's... I wasn't sure when to sign him whether he would be one more for the future, but he looks well cut out for the Premier League, physically strong, nice touch. He looks quite comfortable in front of goals and a good run of form. And I just look at him, you know, home game where your odds on to win. Fulham have lost the last three games, so a bit of a lack of confidence there. I think Newcastle's price is probably about right, but for a game when your odds on to win at home and your centre forward who's in form is 9-2 to score the first goal, I think that's big enough for me. Voltimada to get the first goal.
Yeah, also a massive positive, Mark, to see Anthony Gordon playing the way he did against Benfica.
Yeah, he sort of looks favourite, doesn't he, to play on the left wing at the moment for England, if you're thinking about the World Cup. Offers good balance down that left-hand side, something that was really missing in the last tournament. Rashford scored a couple of goals for Barcelona in midweek, actually, as the centre-forward position he doesn't like to play. But they seem to be the two sort of favourites of Thomas Tuchel for that left-hand side. And, you know, if Gordon carries on, you know, I think he'll be starting come the World Cup. In terms of this game, I think one interesting little just bit to take from it is that the market doesn't rate Fulham at all, really. So interesting to see whether they can kind of defy that or end up slipping sort of down the table where the sort of some of the 90-minute market prices would suggest they might be heading. For this game, I'm going to go for a draw half-time, Newcastle full-time on the double result market. Fulham, as you mentioned, lost their last three, but they were level at the break in all of them. Eventually, though, I'd expect Newcastle to break them down. And it's just Fulham are another one of them teams you wonder where the goals are going to come from.
Well, that wraps up then the Premier League fixtures for this week. Next up, it's your FPL update, and then we'll be back to discuss all things EFL. Well, it's FPL time again, and we're joined this week by Jamie Philby to run through his tips on who to have in your team this week.
So, game week 9 is almost here, and we've got three assets for you to consider transferring into your team. Starting in defence, Reece James could be a shrewd transfer in this game week. The Chelsea skipper is fresh off an 18-pointer last time out against Nottingham Forest, and the Blues host Sunderland at Stamford Bridge this weekend. He started the last four league games and netted a mega 29 points. He's flying under the radar. In midfield, Bukayo Saka can continue his good form at home to Crystal Palace. Saka has notched 15 points in his last two starts, and he's priced at 10 million, which is still good value. He's been transferred in by over 200,000 FPL managers already. And finally, our striker selection is Newcastle star Nick Voltimada. What a start it's been for the Geordies' new fan favourite in the Premier League. He scored four goals from five starts from an XG of just 2.6. Voltimada comes in at 7.4 million and he's owned by 17% of all players. He's the most transferred in player this game week with over 500,000 managers bringing him in. And you can see why, because the Geordies host Fulham on Tyneside.
Well, a big thanks to Jamie for his input on the FPL. We're going to turn our attentions now to the Football League. And as ever the case is, seems to be this time of the year, there's been another managerial sacking and a managerial appointment very close together. Steve Bruce has been sacked, of course, as Blackpool manager in League One, and Ian Evatt has been appointed as his replacement. Former Blackpool centre-back, he was one of the squad, of course, were in the Premier League, and since leaving Bolton, has been out of work and now takes over at the Tangerines, who are currently bottom of League One. And Dan, he's got a task on his hands, but you have to say they've been underperforming when you consider the squad they've got.
They have. They've had a lot of injuries, though. What I would say that didn't help Steve Bruce. I think he'll get the buy-in from the fans because as a former player. However, I think it's a little bit risky because the style, he's very much known as a possession-based manager. So there's clearly going to be a change at the moment. Blackpool's possession stats are 20th. In League One. So he's going to look to change the style. Now, sometimes when you do that and the team's out of form and struggling, it can go from kind of bad to worse. And a lot of the Bolton fans were, you know, by the end of his reign there, and he'd done good things early on at Bolton, were really frustrated by, you know, the passing the ball sideways and getting caught in possession, that kind of thing. So I think to take over a team at the bottom of the league and implement that style and get results, I think, you know, he's going to be a tricky one. But certainly for Black, they started the season with hoping they might be a top six team. I think now, you know, if they can finish just above the outside of that bottom four, their fans will probably take that.
Just a quick word from you on Steve Bruce. He's now 64 years young. Makes me feel a bit old when I hear that sort of stat. But I just wonder whether we might have seen the end of his managerial career now in the AFL.
Possibly, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of... He's had a lot of, you know, mixed time, should we say, in the last few jobs that he's had. And the issue is, when you're falling further down the leagues, and he won't have a lot of knowledge of those leagues, you know, I mean, if he now ends up, you know, like Mark Hughes ended up at Carlisle, didn't he? And then, dropped into the National League. And you just think, how suited is he going to be, you know, even less suited to those jobs than he has been to jobs higher up the ladder. So, we'll have to watch this space, I suppose.
Yeah, Mark, who do you think, Steve Bruce, is that maybe the end of his managerial time?
I wouldn't say that because you could, you know, a team in sort of gets in trouble, wants something for the last four or five games of the season, seems to be on speed dial of a lot of managers, a lot of sort of club owners, doesn't he, to sort of be a bit of a firefighter. Like, conflicted because I'm immediately thinking like his time is just over, he's just a bit of a dinosaur. But I've met his son, Alex, a few times, and he's such a nice guy that I sort of almost don't want to say that, but you've got to be true to what you think. So, he's not done a good job at Blackpool this season, that's for sure.
Let's head to this weekend's fixtures now, and we'll start off by getting Dan's best bet for the Championship games this weekend. And who are we looking at here, Dan?
I think Hull look a nice price. Odds against to win at home to Charlton. Both going well at the moment. Hull in seventh place, Charlton in fifth. Both on 18 points. I'm not sure either of these will end up in the playoffs, but I just think Hull have got a little bit more in their squad, and certainly offensive-wise, Ollie McBurney up front has been doing really, 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 really well for them up front. Got a lot of decent movement in attack. I think they'll probably finish a bit higher. So the fact they're odds against, and also Charlton have had a... They've won 3-0 at Ipswich in the week, but that still would have taken a lot out of them. They got three goals there in the space of 13 second-half minutes. So it's a bit of a strange game. They actually gave up 31 shots in that match as well, Charlton. So to have another tough away game off the back of that against a Hull side that got 13 points already at home, already beaten the likes of Southampton 3-1, Leicester 2-1 this week, I think Hull can get another win here against Charlton.
The Racing Post tipping guru Richard Birch. Birch, he's a massive Charlton fan. He's not going to be happy with you, Charlton. <at all.
laughs> I was just looking at the stats of the day. Ollie McBurney and Joe Gelhard have got 10 goals between them already this season for Hull. And at that level, those two really are a threat in the Championship. So Dan's going for Hull against Charlton in the Championship. What about League One, Dan? Who's your best bet here?
We talked about Ian Evatt, didn't we, going into Blackpool. His first game is a basement battle away to Peterborough, a second from bottom. Peterborough keeping faith at the moment with Darren Ferguson. He's got a very good relationship with Darren McAntony, who's appointed him a few times. I can't actually remember how many off the top of my head. But he's been doing speaking in the week, McAntony, about saying he's the right man for the job and that he's, you know, he's sure that he'll dig them out of it. I think they'll get a win here, Peterborough, at home to Blackpool. They've won three of the last five league games, so they've been turning the corner a bit, Peterborough. They won 1-0 at Burton last weekend. Now Darren Ferguson admitted they were absolutely dire for in the first half of that game, but they dug out an ugly win, and I think that now, you know, that's going to give them a bit of confidence. And at home to Blackpool, as I've said, are on a poor run of form. Does ever implement a style change? They've got lots and lots of injuries still at the moment as well, Blackpool. I just think Peterborough, odds against to win this at home, are worth taking.
Okay, well, so far we've got Hull and Peterborough from Dan for the EFL bets, and we'll conclude with Dan's League Two pick. And who are we looking at here, Dan?
I'm going to go with Shrewsbury or draw double chance away to Oldham. Shrewsbury just got themselves out of the relegation zone recently. A couple of back-to-back home wins, three clean sheets now in a row as well. So things are starting to... They've had a horrible time, Shrewsbury, for a while, but things are starting to turn for them. And Michael Appleton, who's been kept faith with him in charge. And this is a chance for them, I think, to go and get at least another point. Oldham have... five games without a win at the moment under Mickey Mellon, and got quite a few injuries that they're dealing with at the moment. Only won one of their six home games as well this season. So to be looking at, you know, backing them around evens, I think that's, I wouldn't be going near that. I'll be opposing them. Shrewsbury or draw, double chance.
Okay, big thanks to Dan for his EFL tips as ever. It's Mark's turn now as we turn our attentions to the Premier League bet builder. I think I'm right in saying, Mark, that we're looking at Saturday evening's clash between Brentford and Liverpool.
Yeah, G-Tech, 8 o'clock, going for Liverpool to win the game. Confidence hopefully restored after the thumping win over Eintracht Frankfurt in midweek. Slot was able to rotate a few players as well, so tiredness shouldn't be that much of an issue. And Brentford played on the Monday as well. I do, though, feel that Liverpool, as Dan referenced earlier, are not perfect defensively. So going for over 2.5 goals in the game, Thiago up front for Brentford definitely offers a sort of unique, almost Mateta-like threat, I suppose, for them. But Liverpool can cover this by themselves, and Slot seems to quite be sort of going towards a 4-2-4 almost sort of way of thinking at times this season. He's trying to get as many forwards as he can onto the pitch. We saw that in midweek with Ekotike and Isak and Gakpo and Verts as well. So going for over 2.5 goals. I mentioned him earlier. I think Gakpo, probably the least heralded of that sort of front four, if you like, looks as big a threat as anyone. So I'm going for Gakpo to have a shot on target. He's getting a lot of shots away. He was cursing the woodwork against Manchester United last week. Could have had a hat-trick, really, from that game. So Liverpool to win, over 2.5 goals, Gakpo shot on target.
Okay, that's Mark's bet builder then for this week. Time now for the assist treble with a selection from each of us. And Dan, we'll start with your selection first.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Man City to win at Villa. I mean, at the moment, City are unbeaten in 9, Villa unbeaten in 8. I just think that City's run is more sustainable. I think Tielemans is still a big loss for Villa. They've got the Europa game to you know, that they're going, as Mark's mentioned as well, that they're going to be, you know, putting quite a high focus on. So City to win this one.
Okay, it's Man City for Dan, and I think you're sticking in the Premier League, Mark.
I'm going for Liverpool. The XG against Man United, 2.6 to 1.3. Against Chelsea, it was 1.9 to 1 in Liverpool's favour. Like, you can't read everything on XG, obviously, but I do feel like they've been unlucky in some of these losses. And there's often a crisis made out when a big team goes on this kind of run, but doesn't last too long, and expect them to win at Brentford, just like Man City did a couple of Sundays ago.
I'm going from the heady heights of Man City and Liverpool to Fleetwood in League Two, because I'm going with them to beat Accrington at 21-20. The hosts have collected 7 points from the last four league games. Got a really good 1-1 draw against informed Chesterfield last week as well. They're unbeaten in the last four at home, and they've scored 7 goals across the last two matches at the Highbury Stadium with wins over Harrogate and an informed Colchester as well. Accrington, meanwhile, have lost 4 of their 6 league games on the road this season, and Fleetwood are unbeaten in the last 5 meetings with Stanley. So it's Fleetwood for me in League Two to join Liverpool and Manchester City as the assist treble. And we'll conclude this week's show with the naps of the week from both Mark and Dan. And Mark, we'll start with your nap first.
Chelsea to win and under 4.5 goals against Sunderland at Stamford Bridge. But Sunderland games have not been particularly high scoring. 7 of their last 8 in all competitions been under 2.5 goals. And you have to go back to September last year for the last time that Chelsea had a league game at home with more than 4 goals in it. They are a team that tends to just get the job done rather than hammer sides. I know they against Ajax, they did put them to the, if you pardon the pun, the cleaners. But, Ajax had a player sent off, didn't they, after, what was it, early on that kind of changed the direction of that game. So Chelsea to win under 4.5 goals.
And Dan, what's your nap of the week?
Yeah, Peterborough to beat Blackpool in the League One basement battle. Peterborough got 1 point from their first 7 games. They took 9 from the next 5, so they're improving. Blackpool haven't taken any points on their travels. I don't see that changing even in the first game under Ian Everett.
Quick thanks as ever to both Mark and Dan for their input this week. Don't forget, of course, to like, subscribe and comment on the Racing Post YouTube channel. Just a quick reminder as well that our new NFL show, The Punt Team, is back again this week, where the guys will look forward to the fixtures in game week 8 of the American football season. The Assist will be back next Thursday, but for now, enjoy your football this weekend. And as always, please remember to gamble responsibly.